Charlie said to me, I've never had ambitions to become a foreman, you know. Mm. And Charlie said, what are you doing it for, Phil? I said, well, I don't know. I said, oh, Jack's talked me into it. Like, you know, and I said, I've got a couple of boys, and I said, there might be a bit more security there, like, you know.
No security.
And, but I can honestly say this, I could walk in any pub in Fitzroy or Collingwood, and I've got no worries in the world, you know. I've never ever docked anybody. I've never sacked a man.
Jesus, I've tried you some of them.
Yeah, and I've gone. We're on a case up to the city court and fronted for a fella. That's Alan, old George Alan. Yeah, and when the old bloke on the bench said to me, he said, what was your position? I said, I was foreman in charge of the job. He said, what did you think about this man's condition and the way I liquor? I said, this man, in my opinion, sir, was going down below to do his work without any worry in the world. I said, my idea, he was fit and capable of doing his work. He said, case dismissed. And I said, they never lived it down. They give it to me, that big Bruno, give it to me one night coming out of the dock. You know, the big German bloke, the big German copper?
Yeah. Oh, the big copper.
Yeah, he going out the gate, and he got me out of the holding again. And he said, where have you been drinking? I said, well, you mean where have I been working? He said, you look the worse for liquor. I said, no, the worst for work. And he's got his hand on the back handle of the door, and I said, working it up and down. I said, these handles break that easy. I said, and that's the easiest way to break them. I said, now you make up your mind what you want to charge me with, and get your hands off that handle, and we'll go down and get it fixed up. Get in the bloody car and get going, you know.
Was this because he was annoyed because you said the guy wasn't drunk?
No, because I stood up for this member, like, you know.
Oh, yeah, okay.
This fellow, and he wasn't drunk. He was going to do his work, but... I mean, I reached the stage. I was the only one on the on the ship voice in the protest, like, you know, screaming.
Yeah.
And I said, they're not taking him away. They said, yes, we are. I said, what are you charging him with? And they said, we're going to charge you the worst for liquor. I said, this man's all right. I said, leave him on his job. Let him go and do his work. So he went away over with the corner with him, and he come back and he said, oh, I don't say any more. He said, they're going to let me get away when let me go when I get up the road.
What would they want him for then? Why?
Patient
and under the influence.
Oh, I see.
On our trust property.
But was he?
Of course, I didn't. No, I couldn't. No. A fortnight later, his brother came to me on a job, Bobby Allen, and he says, was you the foreman on the job? And I said, yes. I said, in charge. He said, what do you think about George? I said, oh, nothing to worry about. I said, they let him go. I said, no. He said, they've charged him. And I told him, like, you know, that he was fit and capable to do his work. He said, if I get an affidavit, he said, would you sign it? I said, I'll come up in front. He said, but what about the management, like? I said, I'm not worrying about management. Nothing's ever worried me. If a man's right, he's right. And if he's wrong, well, there's not much he can do about it. But in my opinion, he was fit and capable of doing his work. Of course, he had Burke from the South Melbourne Football Club, you know, fronting for him. Yeah. And Burke said to me, he said, if you stand up in that box, he said, this man's going to save his docket, like, you know.
He would have lost his living. You can't be drunk and...
It's a conviction. And once you get a conviction, your docket's talking.
Yeah, at the time, he had kids, like, you know. Well, he had the kids that are running around there, Port Melbourne, then now, like, you know. And it was a bit rude in my estimation, because... At least he was on the deck and he's going down the ladder. And I mean, if he was drunk, he'd be flat out doing that, like, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, I wouldn't employ a man that was drunk myself. I'd have to get rid of him some way because he'd be too much of a...
Mostly said, sick.
Yeah, that's right. He'd be too much of a danger to the other men on the job.
I suppose in the old days, a foreman in the old days and a foreman today is a very different thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, the foreman...
And I'd say, sit there, John. I'll look it on. Sit there. And he'd be thinking, you know, he had something in his mind and you just didn't want to distract his line of thought, like, you know. But he was one of the nicest fellas. He was a great bloke.
He never, when the gang system came in, John went out, didn't he? That's right.
Yeah.
The time that the second preference was being taken and that you talked about then, that's when John left.
Yeah.
He's due to go into the union.
That's right, yes.
He had a discussion with me outside the compound one day. He said, Tom, I don't think I'm going to go. I said, why, John?
Oh, he's no good or something like that. And you say, oh, why isn't he no good? And you find out the fellow that's telling me he's no good is...
He's no good himself.
There's no good himself, like, you know. There's always condemnation, like, you know.
Now, you know Harry Card. Do you remember Harry Card?
Harry Card, yeah.
Well, I know a bloke following him right from one end of the ship to the other, telling everybody he was a scab, you know.
Yeah.
He did go into the PNC in 1937 or something like that.
Yeah.
But he was one of the most militant fellows, you know, on the waterfront. And
remember the bloke they used to call Alice Bluegown?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
What they call him that for?
He used to wear a blue apron. He used to wear a blue apron. Of course, there wasn't many on the water used to wear aprons, like, you know, you might have stuck a bloke
pockets
with a
lip. Pockets used to have one, didn't
they? Yeah, pockets, yeah.
He used to wear aprons.
I'll never forget the time I was on the Caliga. I was over the hatch of the Caliga, and we're loading the cars, and there's pockets and verdigris on the wharf, you know. And I said, bring it over to the plumb a bit more, boys, like, you know, just have a little bit more. And Pockets is on one side pushing one way and Verdigris is pushing the other way, opposite, like, you know, in the
pushing
car.
Pushing against one
another. I was nearly hysterical. Hey, oh. And the time he was sitting in the toilet, Pockets with a tin of sardines, opened them up and the two coppers walked in. And he said, do you want some?
When the gang system came in, did you lose much in the way of your freedom to choose work and that?
You couldn't stand in for an individual company then. They just put in their application for labour.
That's right. That's like what he lost his deep sea gangs and got a whole lot of blokes from the river. Oh. You know, didn't have any choice who you got.
Oh, I don't think there was that much difference. Everybody was versed practically in the way of anybody just coming into the industry. They were versed in the knowledge of doing all types of work.
Probably, you know, Bert wouldn't have noticed the difference as much as people who'd been there 30 years, you know, and had their own little corners and their own blooming two-wheelers and Patrick's and all this rubbish.
Yeah, well, I'm coming in to where that's going out. It's like, see, the union company had the disciples. And all they did was work for the union company. And if they weren't on a ship like the Taruna or the Narana, they would be cleaning up around the store, handling gear and things like that. And that's what they more or less had a corner. They would work any time, practically, on those two ships to get them away. I mean, it was like they knew they was doing a service. They were going to Tassie and things like that, and they always leaned a little bit like those sort of things. But I think... that's when those corners went out, when the gang system come in, because...
And following the timber, or following this or that.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well, you it no suited
longer,
them.
You no longer follow that. You no longer follow that. And another thing, you wanted a day off. You was conscious about it as an individual. You'd have to get the gang to take a vote on it at the majority.
That's right.
So you might be... War years, it was 7 days' work. Developed to the stage, didn't it, about 7 days' work. You had some gang, you never hardly got time off at all, and you get that bloody sick of work and no time off. You say, well, what about us applying for a day off?
Oh,
you individually, before the gang system, would take the day off. You wouldn't stand up or something like that. But with the gang system, you was part of that gang, and you say, oh, well, we'll take a vote on it.
They'd have to bring in a floater, would they, then?
No, well, the old gang would take the day off.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, just say they had a long stretch, like, you know, they'd been on a job for 10 days, and they say, oh, well, it's time we had a bit of a break, so we can apply for a day off, and it was recognised for the length of time that they'd been on the job.
Oh, that was in the award, then, wasn't it?
No.
But it was allowed.
It's
allowed.
For practice.
Yeah, unpaid, of course.
Oh, paid.
Unpaid, oh, yes, it was, you know, it was... nothing for you.
It's a little bit like, you know, like when they said to John Kerr, they said anyone could have done it any time, but it had never been the practice to do it before. He said this was a poor practice that you could do.
It was a poor practice.
Yes.
Gangs had reached an exhaustion stage, and they did. Yeah. They did. Physically and mentally reached a long...
Some blokes are that angry they'd never want a day off.
Oh, no.
But most gangs, reasonable gangs, will say, oh, Christ, it's time we had a day off. And then you take a boat on it.
So anyway, there was that much work around during, I mean, you'd been likely to have been, during the war, it was probably one of the few times they could have changed that system because, you know, the blokes were already committed in lots of ways and sort of feeling they had to work, you know, pretty regularly anyway. I mean, it wouldn't be, if, I suppose if you, it didn't, weren't you manpowered? I mean, if you took too many days off, wouldn't they put
they
you...
They wouldn't give them to you.
Well, I mean, if you just took them off, like
well,
before...
Well, you'd have been up before the board.
Yeah, but
you'd
before been up the gang system, if you'd have taken too many days off, couldn't you lose your docket? I mean, didn't you have to front? I mean, because they were putting people into the army if you didn't... I mean, well, my brother worked in the CAC, and if you didn't go to work every bloody day, they used to just sack you and put you in the army. Would that have happened?
Different phrases.
Yeah.
You see, we're going through different periods.
Yeah.
Lew Allpress, for instance, would hang up his docket and go shearing for the shearing season.
Yeah, he couldn't once the gang system came.
Once the gang system became in, you followed the occupation as a waterside worker. Before that, it was a casual job. You could hang your docket up and not go there for a month, couldn't you?
11 months, I think it was the length of time.
11 months?
Yeah.
And you'd hang your medal up in the union rooms. You hung that up. And I think, as Bert said, 11 months, then you had to come back.
So people like you didn't lose much from the gang system. You gained regular employment and regular workmates and a bit of and more comradeliness.
I think so, yes. I think you did, Wendy. Yeah.
But people who wanted, like Jimmy Nagle, for instance, who was a bike rider and wanted 2 days off on, you know, to go bike riding, he would have lost.
Well, it wouldn't have suited him, let me put it this way. Then again, probably he mightn't have joined a gang. He mightn't become a member of a gang. He might have been a floater and he'd been an individual then. He probably could have done what he liked.
Could floaters take odd days off?
They could take days off, as long as it wasn't too much. Yeah.
And what about the criminal class? Would this have eliminated the criminal class from the war bit if they had to go every day?
You know,
I'm not talking about war thieves merely having half the cargo. I'm talking about real crooks, you know, who are using it for a
fraud. And stop that.
There was plenty of those, wasn't there?
Yeah.
But
even in
the Martin brothers.
Yeah.
O'Hara.
Yeah.
And,
what's the name?
Summers
and Fitzroy. Yeah. Mm.
Roy Bruin. Now, what did Roy Bruin go off before then?
No, Roy Bruin.
It's real funny, you know. Tell us, you became a foreman when?
I became a foreman around about 1955.
So you'd been about 10, 12, 14 years on the wharf?
I'd been, yes. I had a break for a couple of years. Mm. I went to Kempton's. Things got very bad in 50, you know.
On the wharf?
Mm.
No work?
Very bad. I got panicked a bit, like having the two boys and that, you know, and at the time. And I went to Kempton's for 12 months carrying flour. So...
Would that be as well paid as the
war? Oh, no. Existence, like, you know, when a year. It's just a wage, you know,
just
the barest.
The boys and
yes.
Education was coming.
And I was a bit,
There was still
I was so much of the depression, you know, and you didn't know what was going to happen.
There was still some feeling that the Labour movement had predicted there would be another depression after the war, didn't it? And this was a feeling of depression. Now the war's over, the depression's on again.
I think in 50 things looked that bad. It looked as though you was heading back. You just had a bit of breathing space from 39 to 50. You had that bit of breathing space. The war was finished and everything was just winding up and it looked as though, we're going to get back to the old 30s, you know?
It was very, very widely, but I wouldn't go to the house. We wouldn't.
No, everybody was. That's right. No, everybody was a bit worried at the time, weren't they? I think I might have panicked a bit, but of course it never done me any harm, like what I did do. Then I went back, of course it was always my old love, the waterfront, for the variety of the life, and as I said before, the comradeship, like, you know, good blokes, best blokes. And, it was nice to get back in 52. Then I started... I think it was about 54, but I went with the union company as a foreman.
Oh, you were the union company too?
Yeah.
Now, Alf was saying he wouldn't be a foreman for any other company but the union company. Is that your opinion?
Oh, that's for sure.
I'll tell you what.
No way, living.
There was none in the union company.
There was never a bad foreman. Say that again, Tom.
What? There was never a bad, real bad foreman in the union company.
Why?
There was, I don't know, the company never pushed him so much, did it?
Well, they never put the pressure on you. See, there's always a big margin between a stevedoring company and a shipping company. And they weren't a stevedoring company. All they were was a shipping company that stevedores their own ships. And you're not getting into the part where you went to Strang's and if half a pallet of dried fruit come out of the shed, they'd leave it there till they could build it up to a full pallet. There was no way knowing they'd want half a pallet to go in unless there was a large sling or something like that. And with the union company, they more or less left it to yourself. But with the union company, you had foremen that had knocked about. And the bloke, in my opinion, that's knocked about and mixed with men and realised what things are all about, he is the man.
You mean there was no boss's sons coming up?
No, Wendy, no. I mean, like myself, and I went through the depression. And I knew how hard it was. And it wasn't for me to make it hard for anybody else.
What was the difference between the union company and the others? What was the difference in their operations? What sort of shipping did they have, for instance? What sort of cargo?
You missed the point here, Wendy.
Victorian Stevedore and Company, Strang's, and all those stevedore and companies was in the business to make money from stevedore.
Yeah.
The union company is a shipping company, but has its own ships. Stevedore's its own ships, so that it don't make a separate profit, it has to make a separate profit just purely from stevedore. It's overall, so the pressure wasn't so great. Now, the
when
pressure wasn't on the foreman. In fact,
know, when
you never ran a supervisor, really, did you?
Hardly, Tom. You done it all yourself.
Yeah, you never had a supervisor.
You rigged the gear. Mm. You rigged your own gear, and you put your own lifts in and things like that. With fellows that you knew were prepared to help you. And they would help you where probably somewhere else they'd be half interested. But
the union company doing its own stevedoring, the union company was in business to make a profit overall, full stop, and they weren't pressing you to make a profit from your operation.
Not the pressure, was it?
Yes.
That's right. They wanted the job done, but they weren't going to go and kick anybody in the guts to do it.
They weren't costing any operation separate.
That's right.
The gangs in the union company wouldn't be earning perhaps three quarters what a gang would be earning in the Victorian Stevedore Company. But they'd much prefer to be in the work for the union company at less and get less money for it than what they would work for the Victorian Stevedore.
Right.
I'm thinking of the scoundrel and people like that.
Yes, that's right. Even myself, I was never well paid for what you do for the union company.
You work for the union company.
Oh, yes. You'd work twice as hard for the union company as you would for outside.
And you'd get more money outside.
You had a job, the fellas come there, and they'd say to you, fancy cracking it for a job with a union company. And you knew them. They were your own mates, like, you know what I mean? Sometimes they played up, but they'd always make it up to you. And you'd say, well, right, our boys, like, you know, we've got to do doing this and doing that, and they'd realise. And the feeling was absolutely tremendous, like, you know.
Well, now tell me about the union company. How big is it? What sort of ships did it run?
Well,
it
only really done the New Zealand trade. It it's the old P&O, like it used to do the Matua and the Carapo and all those old wide tacky and those old time ships and that, and it only and also the Hobart trade.
And
there was no overseas.
Just
only
coastal
probably.
The green boats.
That's right, and then mostly they used to do the Canadian Oregon. They used to have the old park boats. The Waitomo and things like that.
Is
like,
it an Australian company or a British company?
It's, I think there's a P&O's got a little bit in it.
Yeah.
And New Zealand has got a bit in it.
New Zealand government's got a bit.
A lot of slice in it, yeah. P&O, it was originally, P&O had the most of the shares, I think.
I see.
But,
It was one of the smaller companies on the waterfront, is it? One of the smallest companies?
Oh, yeah, it'd have to be, yes. Yeah, it'd be the smallest.
Be ahead of Ollimans when they were.
Oh, yes, Ollimans. Just ahead of Ollimans.
Be just about next to Ollimans.
That's
second
right.
Lowest on the list as far as size of companies.
But under the name of Union Company, I think they lived up to it, even the superintendents on that. old Captain Buckingham and Les English. Yeah. They wouldn't sack a man.
They were good men.
Did they run down to Strawn too? And
yes.
I was there
at the war, you know, over there at Holloman's, when there was a shortage of labour. The police used to make up a gang.
Yeah.
They used to work the night shift.
And feed the cattle.
And that's right.
We've got that whole chapter called 5 quid a week and half the cargo, and we're experts on that.
We got backlash on that one.
Oh, Jimmy. But the funniest part about that, they say it was half the cargo. If the stuff that they attributed to going off the waterfront was taken by waterside workers, they'd want a Gladstone bag about 30. Be 40, like it'd be unreal, because they've only, after all, they've only got their body, and they never had cars in those days, and all they had, the main thing they carried was a Gladstone bag, and whatever you could get into those things, unless it was diamonds or gold or something like that, it'd be trivial, but they still got it the same. But
mostly inside of you, what you took out, Bert, what, a bit of chocolate or something?
I'd say that 90% never even went in the wharf gate.
Oh, it was organised outside.
Oh, well, it's just a matter of going in and signing a docket. It was dropped somewhere, driving the truck in, signing the docket. It's in the shed.
Mm.
And it was never, ever in the shed. And that was it. And it was being proved.
Yeah.
It has been proved by, because there's been people found guilty of it.
Yeah.
In the place
a load
like...
A mole come up, sent up under the wharf, he he was a detective. That's not unbelievable.
Yes, it is. Listen, now tell us, okay, now, so that was the union company, and being a foreman is a different thing to when you were pushing this tremendous pressure on them, of, you know, it's a different thing as far as today, is it? I mean, for instance, can a foreman sack someone today?
Well, he still has to supervise, still have to go through a supervisor, like in respect of that. But
the union, for instance, the strength of the union.
A bad one now. Supposing a foreman had a real bad one and he had to do something about it, who'd he go to the supervisor and talk to him about it?
Well, you try and get to the delegates first, you know.
You go to the delegates.
I'd rather go to Jeff Swain. I'd rather go to the union.
Union first, yeah.
You don't want to come into conflict with the union. You'd rather sort of.
I'd rather thrash it out.
This is the principle.
No.
He's working on.
No. I'd rather thrash it out with a fellow myself. And say, like, you know, like, you can't
most
go on like this.
You
what are you going to do? Like, you're not hurting me, but the fella you're working with. Mm. I've got a, like, they're your mates, and they're doing your work, and you're playing up, like, how long's it going to go on for? And I wouldn't, I don't believe in, that's the last resort, as far as management's concerned, like, you know,
yeah,
I'd rather, you know, be two out or something like that, you know, and I mightn't solve it, but... I don't think it's going to solve it running to the management and things like that.
Well, Tom was saying that the difference between the foreman in these days and the old days is that then the foreman was under very strong pressure from the company to get his results.
Crunch.
And he was the one with the crunch came up from both sides. The wharfers were telling him to get the buggery and the company was telling him to get the results. And also, he said, now what with the gang system and with the arrangements with the union, it's much harder for a foreman to be a tyrant than it was. Was it easy to be a tyrant in the old days?
Well, let us put it this way, Wendy. Most of those companies' foremen got a bonus. And money speaks a lot of languages, you know? And it can turn a person. The union company was never known to pay a bonus to any foreman in its history. And as far as I can remember, the only one that ever got anything was an old friend of mine, Jack Favor. And he got a letter of thanks. After I would say, with his stevedore and knowledge and saving them, like you wouldn't estimate the money that he saved them. And when Jack retired, they said, "Here, Jack," and they give him an envelope, and he said, "Thank you very much." And when he opened it up, they just like to express the thanks.
Well,
and I think it's, in a way, it's a good thing. You don't buy people.
No, that's right.
And this is what did happen, like with these companies, like Strang's and Fix, and the. Half yearly bonus, they say, well, there's 60 for you and 60 for you, and they were telling you that they were giving you 60 because they wanted results. Now, to get results, you could have put pressure on people, and there might be some people you can't put pressure on, and they don't like having pressure put on them. And is it worth it? a few lousy quid or something like that.
Tommy Deegan's very bitter about the United, you know. Mm. Now, I expect Tommy Deegan would have saved them a fortune, you know, down Geelong, and that is all down Geelong and Portland and that. And he said he walked out of that place like a dog when he finished.
Didn't give you any super or anything?
No, they never thanked him or nobody spoke to him. All those people that he'd, on top that he'd worked for, they never even thanked him.
No.
Yeah.
And he was a very efficient foreman.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, getting back to the union company, the only thing he ever got off them was what you earned. But it was still suitable because you didn't have to press people. And any foreman that came in, which there was only about 10 at the time, they knew exactly what they had to do. Mm. They knew what the other foremen were like, and that they couldn't change their, much as they'd like to have, they couldn't change the setup.
They went into the pack, they had to follow the pack.
Oh, the secretary of the Foreman's Association came from the union company, didn't he? McIntyre?
No, Holloman's,
that's right, I'm sorry.
Now look, tell me, what was the foreman, were there bad foremen on the wharf when you came on, or had they been tamed by that time? What was a bad foreman likely to do? You were saying before that they screwed him, you know. How would you say was a typical bad foreman would behave in your day?
Oh, well, I mean, there was a lot of, I think there was foremen that couldn't speak to people properly. They tried to get gangs to do too much. Well, they were unionists, just the same as everybody else, and they were trying to a certain extent, upset other union conditions by forcing members to do things that they didn't have to do, and they didn't even have to, it wasn't even warranted.
Some of the ones that John Morrison describes were like that, you know, just being, throwing their weight around.
That's right, yeah, that's true, Wendy, yes, they... Just the power, you know, that little, they say you put a uniform on a person and they go mental. And they never put a uniform, they put a pair of overalls on them and they give them that bit of power. And, of course, after them, a lot
some
of them
had to be... As a delegate, you could never speak to some foreman. Oh. You go along to them and I think I was pretty reasonable as a delegate on the board.
Oh, you've got four stars in Bluey's book.
No, I'd never kept a book.
I'm trying to think of some of their names. When you just, it didn't matter how reasonable the request was, you couldn't talk to them.
No, that's true. I remember even going back to my days of before becoming a foreman, and you'd have to endorse like what you're saying, that it wouldn't do it to me, because. I don't think anybody's entitled to be spoken to properly. And even though I was delegate many, many times, like, you know, and I found that if you was a bit firm in your approach, but your approach was right, and there's always ways and means of settling an issue, in my opinion, if there wasn't enough men down there, they'd work one side.
And they'd probably... You'd always solve it.
Yeah, well, you'd always solve it. It's only things like that. And... It was only those few that just got carried away, and like in every other industry, you find these people.
I suppose they come up with the pressure that was being putting on from above would produce more pressure on the foreman to be pressing, you know, the other people. Because I'll tell you what,
he still was down strings. They had that many bloody tie-ups at times, didn't they? Because of the tactics of these people that they were losing them.
Oh yeah, of course they did. It was nothing for them.
It's rather interesting.
It was nothing for them to have their ships tied up for two or three days through stupid ignorance, like,
stupid,
you know.
Stupid ignorance.
One of them,
Paddy Hall.
Paddy Hall, yeah.
He followed in the footsteps of them doing the same tactics.
Yeah.
What sort of thing would he do?
Oh, you know, he'd come up and start a bloody row and go away laughing, you know, when he had everybody on edge.
Yeah.
We were doing a bag job one day, and I declared he put one stage in down, and then they put another stage in on top of it, you know.
Yeah.
Stage in, and it wasn't safe under the plumb.
The trestle business.
Oh,
yeah, that was never
right. And he wouldn't ship it. We had one hell of a pint average, you know.
Yeah.
Now he stopped that ship completely for bloody 2 days, had to stop for that purpose.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, where they were. No, you know, they were never good, really, supervisors. Aspinall at the big company one night, I was acting BO at the time, he put the pontoons on the working side of the ship, and they were over above the chains, you know, on the rails.
Yeah.
5 minutes' work just to swing the midship derrick over. And
yeah.
Wouldn't do it.
No.
Held the ship up for hours.
Yeah, ridiculous. I can remember an instance there where they had a ship tied up for a couple of days there, and they had this American ship, you know, yeah. And the skipper said, that ship you're stevedoring over there is working. He said, mine stopped. And they went on with some cock and bull story, like, you know, he says, well, if it's not going within a couple of hours, he said, there'll be another stevedore mob doing it. Needless to say that it was too, like, you know. But they just had the wrong people to handle things.
We had very bad, string had very bad people on the work for them, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, it was unreasonable people, you know.
Yeah, yes, well, it's interesting because you see.
I don't want this on tape.
It's coming to an end anyway, Tom.
I don't want this put on tape.